Welcome to Danelle and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films on obsolete formats. And our film for this episode, episode 3, is Cabaret from 1972, starring Liza Minnelli, directed by Bob Fosse. And in 1972, Cabaret almost swept all the Oscars it was nominated for. If it wasn't for The Godfather, probably would have been the best picture. In fact, it was the rare best picture, best director split. Bob Fosse did win for best director. Liza Minnelli won for best actress. Michael York won for best supporting actress. It was a big deal in 1972. And we have it on Laserdisc. Getting it from... I don't really remember. I think I might have got it from Pleasant Dreams Records in Polish Hill, I think, is where we got this Blu-ray. This Laserdisc. This Laserdisc might have come from there.
Or Half Price Books.
I think it would have had a gnarly Half Price Book sticker still on it. So. I think this is one of the ones John gave me when he was clearing room for the merge of record stores. And so our initial reaction at the time, well, I have actually never seen the film before. I know the story of Cabaret. Never saw it before. So, no, I mean, you, I guess?
I saw it way too young. I probably watched it the first time, probably in the 80s is the first time I watched it. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and they actually had some amazing films on late at night.
On HYY.
Yes, and I was a night owl, and I stayed up late watching films, and so I saw this pretty young, and, you know, of course, television edit, but I definitely remember the songs, but I didn't remember the bleakness of it, and I don't think I fully understood everything that was happening. So this is a film I definitely saw way, way too young.
Single digit age.
And now revisiting it has been very interesting, to say the least.
Yes, especially in 2020, where, of course, you know, if you don't know the story of Cabaret, it is based as a musical based on Christopher Isherwood's Berlin stories, where, of course, if you were alive in the 1930s, and you were a leading light intellectual something-something, Berlin was the place that you wanted to live.
Absolutely.
Because there was all of these kind of expansions of consciousness, expansions of freedom, and expansions of creative thought and artistic merit were happening at that moment. And so, but of course, this other thing was happening in Berlin and in Germany in the 30s. And in a very fascinating way, Cabaret takes on this notion of how people can sleepwalk into fascism.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, before we go on that path, I do think it's interesting to, as you mentioned, it did start with the Berlin stories, which we then became a play. Mm-hmm. I Am the Camera, I believe.
I Am the Camera, which...
And then it became the Cabaret, the musical, the Broadway musical, and then the film version of this.
Yeah.
And so Fosse changed actually a lot of things. So he actually didn't use all the songs from the Broadway musical. He actually took out some characters that were in the book and the play. I think maybe to streamline a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of characters. But I think that... And he also made an interesting choice... Because you think about it, musicals, especially pre-cabaret, you tended to have all the lead characters have their own song. And they would use those songs to express their emotions. And so this was not that. Most of the songs are in the cabaret, except for one crucial song that is not at the cabaret. So I think he did a very interesting job of making the cabaret the microcosm of what was happening. And those songs, as the songs change... And the tone changed. It changes with what's happening at that time. So I think that's all really fascinating, the choices that Fosse made around how to stage it. Because that's not how you would have staged a musical at that particular time. And then he did this was his second film. So his first film was Sweet Charity, which was a more typical musical where you did have all your lead characters had their own song. Those songs were expressing their emotions. And... Michael York. Not once did we hear Michael York.
Yeah.
Michael York sang, and Sally Bowles only sang within the cabaret itself.
Which is interesting, too, to talk about the adaptation from, I mean, we saw this in Cats. you know, this, what do you do, like, this reinterpretation. I mean, I even, for instance, I love the Denzel Washington Fences. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautifully written play. Love to teach me some Fences. If there is a failing to that film, it is that it is shot like a play.
Yeah.
And there's a play, and there's a play, and there's a movie. And the camera can move in a movie.
Yeah.
Right? And so not everybody gets that when they, or they do the adaptation. I think it's some of, you know, some of that's what happened with Cats a little bit. Like, we can do a scene change, and then sometimes have kind of a static camera. Certainly Fences, I think, does that, right? There's only the scene's really only taken place in a handful of them. The camera is very steady.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating. You think Bob Fosse is the second film and it looks like a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a very purposeful choice, and kind of thinking about this film now, because he helped adapt it for the film, right? Like, he helped put the film together. I guess you would say screenwriting credits with it.
Yeah.
I think he was really, really smart in the sense that if you did have, say, Brian or Sally Bowles, like, break out into a song outside of the cabaret, I think it would have taken away from what was actually happening, right? And I think he did these amazing jobs of having these scenes of brutality that were happening, that were interspliced with the life of the cabaret, but also Sally and Brian having these, like, extravagant experiences and having this life where you had Jewish families and Jewish people starting to suffer. And that juxtaposition, I think, was very jarring and very purposeful. And so I do think it would have been very strange for her to, like, randomly break into a song. I don't think it would have fit it. And so it was nice that it was still felt like a musical, but he was very smart in how he structured the musical.
Yeah, which I would also say, this says something about the form. We're watching this on Laserdisc. We watched it on Laserdisc, and on the sleeve, the chapter stops are all the songs. So technically, if somebody wanted to just hear the music and not worry about the plot and the, you know, then sometimes also the incredibly choreographed numbers that went, the dance numbers that went with the songs, you could experience this film just as a musical, just as an opera almost. You just get all the dialogue out and you only have...
Which is fascinating because Bob Fosse, for me, is one of the best choreographers ever.
He's just... Absolutely.
I think he really revolutionized what choreography could be. It's just sexy. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. The way he thinks about body movement and even the movement together. For me, like, Sweet Charity is... I love Sweet Charity. It's an amazing, underrated musical. And if you haven't had the chance, it's Bob Fosse's first one. The choreography in that is amazing. It's completely amazing. And this, the choreography is still wonderful. So it's interesting for someone who has won numerous Tonys, that, you know, after this won, you know, Oscars, he decided to kind of tone down the music part of it, which is fascinating to me. So though the scenes of music are gorgeous, the choreography and staging and singing are gorgeous, he's actually more in service of kind of highlighting what was happening at the time.
Yeah, and that thing, and again, watching it in 2020 and making, you know, for a podcast where we talk about the VHS era, you know, how have we sleepwalked into the crisis that we're now in?
Yeah.
You know, there is that book, and I talk about this book in my classes a lot. They're that great history book, Hitlerland, where a historian whose name escapes me, but you can Google it, just went and looked at the personal papers, the diaries, the letters of famous American leading lights who got to Berlin because you're supposed to go to Berlin.
Yeah.
And, you know, he found that a third of people were forward thinking and aware enough that this very dangerous and evil thing is happening. Mm-hmm. And there's these people called Nazis, and they could really cause damage if they get in power. Mm-hmm. A third, of course, people like Charles Lindbergh, who ran as a Republican presidential candidate in 1936, thought, wow, this new movement's happening. This is going to solve the problems of our era. And a third were just too happy getting drunk and going to parties and going to cabarets and just having escapist fun and didn't notice or wasn't aware of anything about the political situation.
Yeah, I think, and I think it's interesting too because that's how the characters are set up, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Sally Bowles is actually British, so yeah. She was a change to American. The cynical side of you could say, well, he wanted Eliza, but she wasn't that huge of a star at that point, you know, so you could say he wanted Eliza Minnelli, but she didn't really, that was her breakout role.
Yeah.
And this is what made her a star, and so he could have chosen anyone, and he could have still had the actress be British. I think it's really important that he made her American because she is the one who doesn't make any commentary whatsoever about what's happening at this time. Yeah. So she's out in the streets seeing things, experiencing things, but she's so wrapped up in being that third who is enjoying drinking and is enjoying the life of the cabaret.
And chasing stardom
and kind of ignoring what is happening around her or not being self-aware enough about what is happening around her. And even at the beginning of Cabaret, a Nazi does enter and he's kicked out.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably also just a joke to her.
And it's a joke to everybody.
Yeah. Where,
you know, which is, I think for me, you know, you think about this era, like we're going to have to remember The Daily Show with Jon Stewart as a big part of how we got here.
That's true.
Because you could just laugh at those right-wingers and you're smarter than them and you watch the show, which means you accomplish something. To stop them because you laughed at them. You know, that's part of it. So for me, if you could see her through my eyes towards the end, the fact that an anti-Semitic joke is the punchline to that song.
Yeah.
Is such a way, a turning point in that movie.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think, I know that line was very controversial because it was viewed as anti-Semitic. But if you understand that the cabaret is the microcosm of what is happening...
It's the public sphere.
It's the public sphere,
era.
Yeah.
And the fact that then that Nazism goes from being a joke to being part of the joke. Instead of going from the object to the part of the joke. Is that way that, you know, normal people... There's the housekeeper, the landlady in I Am the Camera, who starts out as like, we're going to have fun and you young people should have fun and whatever to, you know, we need to do something about the Jews by the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the way that normal people, anybody can sort of accidentally backslide into this, you know, reactionary evil politics.
Yeah.
While the world parties, while the world's burning, is...
Well, I think that's the thing.
Fascinating.
You know, it also... He also depends on, you knowing history a little bit, right?
Yes.
And so 1931 is a pivotal time, right? Because the banks are collapsing. Money is collapsing. There, by 1932, I want to say, there was 6 million Germans unemployed.
Yeah.
So there's this start of this huge financial meltdown that was happening. And so they meet Maximilian, who is this wealthy German baron who for a period of time just becomes something he plays with. He takes Sally and Brian and has some fun with them. And then when he's done, he kind of tosses them to the side.
Yeah.
Just kind of saying, like, kind of him viewing that, oh, I can just control the Nazis. This isn't going to be a big thing.
Yeah, they're going to kick out the communists and then we can control them. And
yeah, absolutely. And so not thinking about, like, why people were thinking about the Nazism and why they were joining the party and why there was this interest because everything was collapsing.
And people were losing money. And there was an easy thing to blame, people to blame. there was a ready explanation.
Yeah.
And also, too, I mean, just the sheer use of force, intimidation, and violence.
Yeah.
That is always on the periphery of the film, which is so fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, the way Fosse does that.
Yeah.
You know, which should have been like, which we watched this movie in 2010 or 2015 or 2016, you know. So I guess the other thing we have to talk about in terms of revisiting, you know, and I know this is question two maybe ahead of time, but there's also the interesting thing about this film is 4 years after Stonewall, there is no celluloid closet.
Yeah.
In this film. That it very much deals with ideas of gender fluidity. There are, and bisexuality, and trans, and yeah, gender as performance, drag, all of it.
Yeah.
And this sort of like not just heterosexual freedom.
Yeah.
But a true sexual freedom that's happening in the cabaret world.
So this was the first musical to ever receive an X. It was re-rated at one point, but it was the first musical.
Yes, our Blu-ray, our Laserdisc says it's a PG film.
Right, so it did get re-rated because actually there's not a ton of nudity in it. There's some brief nudity, but they initially got the X rating because of the sexuality, because how open it was about sexuality, which I think is fascinating. And her first encounter with Brian, she makes a pass at him. He is disinterested, and she says, "Do you like boys?" And she's okay with it if he does, which is really interesting.
It's frank and it's open, and it's
her response was, "Well, if you like boys, then I'm not gonna, you know, try to go after you anymore," which was just amazing that she was so accepting of this. And it turns out his character is bisexual, is what we do kind of learn over the course of the film. They don't label it bisexual. He does have sexual encounters with both men and women during the course of the film. And the MC is a gender fluid character.
Yeah.
You don't fully know if he's heterosexual, homosexual, or if he's bisexual. He's this fascinating fluid character. But they also do have a transgender character who doesn't have a huge role, but is evident that people are okay with gender fluidity and how you want to represent yourself at the time, for 1972 is huge.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, I think for me, like, there's the scene where the transgender character is standing up peeing at a urinal, and there's just like an exchange of eyes, like, "Oh, you're there peeing, okay," and then they leave, and it's not it. I'm sure in 1972 people might have laughed uncomfortably, but that was on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't feel like that scene was made to be a joke.
No, not. And Brian even looks back and smiles.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not a smile like, "Ooh, this is an awkward smile." It was like, "Oh, okay," like, kind of smile. It was like an accepting smile, like, you know, "I accept you as the person that you are."
And I think that's the thing too, is maybe it's what this film does. Its power. I mean, okay, first of all, the musical test for me, it's a very low bar. Are the songs good? The songs are good.
Yeah.
Moving on. Is that it? Maybe does it make history this really complex, nuanced thing?
Yeah.
Like, there's this way, and I know I confront it in the classroom, and I know I've confronted it in myself. Like, you're a young person and you learn the world. Oh, things are different now. And somehow the world's more complex. And, like, somehow people in the 30s just didn't know about these things or didn't live through these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could talk about the Kinsey Report after the war. But, the world was really complicated in ways that history has not told us that. And it is very easy, like, to go back to the fascism thing. It's very easy to be, "Oh, those people were evil. We know this now."
Yeah.
You know, but living through it, you know, and having that awareness and having that anxiety in 2020 about where we are and what people are willing to say and think as reactionary politics to attempts to expand human freedom or reclaim human freedom or whatever is happening right now, But yeah, that idea of, yeah, there were queer people in history. Believe it or not, folks, there were queer people in history for a long time. This isn't a post-Stonewall thing. This isn't a 21st century thing. There were queer people in history. It happened, for real.
Well, even the song Two Women, where it talks about a man having two female partners living in the same house. And kind of there is that scene where the lights are flashing and it hints at what's happening sexually.
Yeah.
And there's parts where he's under the covers with both women, parts where he's not under the covers, parts where it's just him and one other woman, which I thought was really interesting. And I think that really got at kind of how relationships could be and just that the typical male and female
heteronormative.
Even the Baron is very clear. He has an open relationship with his wife, and his wife understands that he likes men and women. Yeah. And I think they were just frank discussions, and it was accepted. There at no time was there anybody who was yelling like, "You're going to hell and you're a bad person."
Yeah.
For dealing, it was just very accepted, which was refreshing for a 1972 film that everyone was kind of okay with choices that were happening.
Which is, in a way, you know, I think a mainstream Hollywood film in 2020 would still, I think, come up against some issues.
No, I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%.
Middle America, parts of Middle America would...
Yeah.
You know, that film would not be shown there, you know?
I wonder if that's part of the reason why I didn't get Best Picture, because of that.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting question, because I do feel... in many ways, it's the better film than Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it handles the history, and also the kind of willing ignorance around what was happening with the rise of Nazis at the time really well. And I wonder, though, because of its frank nature around sexuality, that was kind of a little bit off-putting. Like, we don't...
Does that mean The Godfather's crash?
Yeah. I won't go... Or How Green Is Your Valley, right?
I won't
go there.
Which, though, I think the other thing the film does really well is class.
Yes.
You know, that you have the Baron, who's the sort of inherited old money.
Yeah.
Who, yeah, money makes the world go round, and... That's part of the cabaret, is that there is this decadence and there is this splendor and there is this, you know, the world's burning, but we're having the best party.
Yeah.
I mean, I was even thinking about some of the, like, cartoonishly large beers. I mean, granted, Germany, so you're going to have that, but the cartoonishly large beers and the, you know, just the spectacle of it all.
And I think that the beer garden scene is very fascinating.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about.
But I do think...
Tomorrow Belongs to Me.
But I think, yes, and I think it's interesting because the American Sally Bowles is at the party at his palatial estate is the crass one, right?
Yeah.
She's obviously the one who doesn't fit in. She's a crass American, and which I think is very, very interesting, where Brian, as being British, does at least fit in to some degree. And I believe he went to Oxford or Cambridge, so he does have a degree of breeding, which I think was very, very interesting to make that choice. And she does really stick out like a sore thumb. But I do think it's interesting when you think about the beer garden party, and we can talk about the song, but I think... It's a critical point in the film, and she's sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So the American is sleeping. The British man says, "Aren't you worried about it?" And the German man of power and wealth says, drives away. Which I think is kind of really interesting how they all interact with that scene. And I think speaks volumes of where America was at
Where America was, and also this way... The aesthetics of Nazism, the aesthetics of fascism, that there is this strange rural, agrarian, pastoral vision. You know, they go out of the city, go to the beer garden, and it's this very innocent scene. It begins, you know, you just have these like salt of the earth people talking and enjoying their picnic, their meal outside. And it's part of the decadence and splendor of the film. And then the song starts, you know, Tomorrow Belongs to Me. this Aryan boy singing it from the stage, and everybody stands up, and I, you know,
and he's in a brown shirt,
and he is in a brown shirt, and he's got the swastika armband, and there's this way that, you know, the fascism in our time has very much a rural, agrarian, pastoral American aesthetic to it. That there's, you know, this is the real America, and then there's those, you know, evil people in the city with their decadent lives who are, you know, destroying the world, and we need to take our country back.
Yeah.
And that rhetoric. That scene is so chilling in its subtlety.
It is.
You go from, oh, the party's continuing, to absolute worry.
And that's the only song that is sung outside of
the cabaret.
The cabaret. And it's the most important song in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because it does talk, you do see the shift. And the majority of people at the beer garden do stand up. I love the old man who gets this worried look on his face, who refuses to
stand up.
And you have to realize that he's lived through another world war and was probably like, this isn't good. And I love that, just that little old man. I love that man in that moment. But I agree with you completely. You know, there's this same, right, very similar things, right? So we have people who don't have jobs, don't have security, they're frightened and they're nervous. Financial institutions aren't strong as they used to be, and so you know, we talked about in this other, in our previous one, about Johnstown, and it has high poverty, has high unemployment rates, and a lot of people there support Trump because they believe he's gonna bring our, you know, make America great again, right? And isn't that what Hitler was saying? I'm gonna make Germany.
Yeah, and great again. Honestly, as there are, and I, you know, props to those folks and their bravery. There are Black Lives Matter protests happening this week, the weekend we have recorded this, and reading the comments on the WJAC Facebook page as they're covering these peaceful, racially diverse, very articulate, very careful protests, people are willing to say and think anything, and it's terrifying. I mean, it is this place that is near and dear to my heart, has lost its mind.
Yeah.
And how does... Now, I will say, there is the problem, because I always, like, read reviews, and I love Roger Ebert, and I always, like, where can we do a movie? And I, like, go Google Roger Ebert. You know, he makes this equation he's right about so many things, but not this, that... Maybe the point of the film is that in times of moral decadence, evil happens. Which is not the sensibility I would see that film, you know.
I think it's maybe, I will give him, maybe it's him reading it as a time and a place.
Yeah.
And so him reading it from 1970 point of view.
The world still wasn't cool. I mean, you think, was it 1971, DSM-3? Homosexuality is not a mental illness?
Well, I also think Vietnam War was going on at that time. Mm-hmm. There was the decadence of disco and Studio 54.
And, like, the peace movement had gone to shit.
Yeah.
And was about
so
drugs.
I think in a historical context, I could see maybe why he read it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the point Fosse was trying to make, and I think your point about the thirds, right? A third, a third, a third. He really does highlight that, right? And and you do have Brian Hugh. He actually at one point confronts
Nazis and gets beat up.
And he realizes that there's an issue. There's Sally, who's just very oblivious. She's happy to live her life. And then you have, like, for me, the MC, you know, is kind of the omniscient narrator. Yeah. Like, he sees all and knows all and knows what's happening. And I love, there's these points where he just will randomly pop up and you see his face and he'll either say a word or have a reaction, that he knows what is happening and that things are falling apart. So I understand his I could understand maybe where Roger Ebert was coming from.
In 1972.
But I think what it really comes down to is people's willingness to ignore situations and to be comfortable in the situation that they're in is really what it comes down to. And I think, you know, there were certainly Germans who did not agree with the Nazis,
yeah.
right? There were certainly Germans who did not
agree.
There
was a resistance.
There was definitely a resistance.
There were anti-fascists.
But it also got to a tipping point, right? Because 1932 is when the Nazi Party started gaining some power.
Yeah.
So 31, it's very purposeful that it's set in 1931 because this is the pivot point.
Yeah.
This is the point where it is no return. The Nazis start gaining power. There was also the brown shirts were terrorizing people. So there are scenes where you see a man being beaten, a grocery store being torn apart in the Jewish grocer standing there looking off. So you're seeing
a body in the street,
a dead body in the street. Like, so you're seeing this happening. Brian gets beat by Nazis for disagreeing with them. So these things are happening, and they should all be warning signs that people aren't willing to read.
Yeah.
Or there's a group of people not willing to read those warning signs. And because it's easy at that, it was very easy to blame the Jewish for what was happening. And so Hitler was very smart. He chose a group of people to become the emblem of the problems that were happening, and everyone embraced it.
Which you think then you find out that the Baron's Jewish.
The Baron was not Jewish. It was the suitor for the girl.
Oh, the suitor for the girl.
Yeah, they looked very similar, but they're two different characters. Which I also think is very interesting because, you know, so what Fosse brings to the forefront is Sally and Brian.
Mm-hmm.
But you have this wonderful, like, side story of a woman that Brian is tutoring in English who is a wealthy Jewish heiress.
Mm.
And she's learning English and just happens to encounter one of his other tutees who is kind of a scraping by German man who is Jewish but is in the closet, right?
Is this idea of being, you know, how do you take someone who's fully, people who are fully integrated in a society and pillars of the society and part of the society, and then separate them out and demonize them and dehumanize them?
But I think
which is fascinating how that too is possible.
Well, I think he makes an interesting point because she is out and Jewish. People know her family in the community. Mm-hmm. They're a wealthy family. And he is, and his name, I forgot his name. Mm-hmm. Her would-be suitor, he is not very wealthy, but he specifically says, when I moved to Berlin, I changed my papers to say it was Christian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way for him to get the girl is to actually ultimately admit that he is Jewish and that he can be with her. And so that's profound, right? It's profound that he felt that when he moved to Berlin, he needed to hide that he was Jewish so that he could integrate into the community better. And he mentions that he's invited to parties and he has more friends and more opportunities once people realize that he's not Jewish, once people feel that think that he's not Jewish. And so that's fascinating. So you have these like fascinating like nuggets that Fosse just shows you briefly, and then we kind of get
and
into
so
the cabaret.
So there's a very rich world.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's one more thing I want to talk about before we move on to the big five, and that is the Sally Bowles character. As an icon, as a tragic figure, as both, as, you know, she's described as this fabulous character, but, you know, it's one of those, like, the lyrics of the cabaret song, so uplifting, you know, the lyrics are so, you know, nihilistic almost.
Yeah.
You know, and almost as a death wish to them, but it's such an uplifting tune, and it's such a catchy tune, and it's so interesting how maybe that captures her as a character, as this mix of so much fun, but yet, you know, is her chance at happiness gone by the end of the film?
Yeah, I mean, she's fascinating. You also have to think about the women's movement that was happening at that time as well.
Yeah.
So she has her own, though she never has enough money, but she does have her own apartment. She's making her own money. She has as many lovers as she wants to.
Yeah.
She's not married. She ultimately chooses not to get married.
Mm-hmm.
She has an abortion, which is also, for our Catholic review, very alarming.
The Catholic review actually only gave it an A3, which is for adults, not an O.
Mm.
Which, the mention of abortion, the possibility of abortion in All the Right Moves earned that film a morally objectionable, but in 1972, it was an A3.
Which is fascinating.
Not even an A4. Not an O, but in 1972, the film was for adults and said that the kind of the implication of these, like, you know, sexual encounters, of the word they use, but it was like sort of non-normal sexual encounters or sexual, you know, flings.
Yeah.
Maybe troublesome to some adults, but the film is, and maybe is it because it's a musical, is it allowed to get away with things?
Set in a cabaret. Yeah.
Yes.
She is definitely a fascinating character because she, and then, yeah, she doesn't know who the father of the child is because she has had multiple relationships around the same time. She's also interesting because in many ways she's not a likable character.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating when your lead
is
not always fully likable, because she does kind of, doesn't seem to kind of care about her choices and how she treats people, though she can be very charming, which is how she ends up in a relationship with Brian because of that.
All right. So is it time for the big five?
I guess so. Let's.
All right. The five big questions. Number one, of course, is it camp, retro, a classic, or just an old movie?
It's so funny because I mentioned this to you. I felt that Rocky Horror Picture Show borrowed a lot of the aesthetic of this film. So you think about the costuming, especially the costuming, Rocky Horror and the makeup, even some of the dance numbers and things like that, and themes. You know, the themes about also gender fluidity, I think, really.
So does Rocky Horror make these issues safe for the norms?
I think so.
And does Cabaret actually climb the mountain first?
It does. And I think for me, it's
there, you take that, people.
I think obviously Rocky Horror is camp, but I think this is classic.
Absolutely. 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 This is a classic. See it with your friends and then have an awkward conversation about our own casual slip into fascism. Question two.
It's also like, yes, come for the musicals, but stay for the look at fascism.
Stay for the let's examine our own times.
Yeah.
Through this warning from history. Question two, then, is what about the political social distance, Bechdel test, race, all that fun stuff?
I mean, for me, it's still a very relevant film, I think.
Maybe it's still a progressive film.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think now Sally Bowles is actually the only main female character, and she has limited interaction. So she talks to Natalia, the Jewish Harris, a couple times, and they end up talking about Natalia's difficulty with deciding, Fritz is his name, it came to me, of if she should be with Fritz or not. And but so you don't necessarily see her interaction woman to woman, but She is, as I mentioned, a very strong, fascinating character. And then we had already talked about how gender is treated in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, Fosse does not necessarily point it out directly, but he gives you these glimpses of how Jews are being persecuted. Mm-hmm. And it's these like brief glimpses of what's happening around the fund, which is really fascinating.
Yeah. In terms of three, the sort of technical distance from the film, it still looks great. I think it's still, and the room question, I think it is a rich and complete world.
It is.
You know, as a period piece, as a piece of cinema, there's nothing that sticks out. I was like, what? You know? And so then I think this leads to question five, the obvious answer. Is it a keeper?
Absolutely.
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 And again, watch this one with your friends. Watch this one with your friends or people who maybe are not fully aware of what's happening. And then you can have that conversation with them. Or, hey, the songs are still good. I mean, the songs are great. But yeah, this is a tremendous film. As much as Liza Minnelli's become this kind of like camp kitsch figure and a butt of a joke.
And she's also, you know, is a gay icon. You know, you have to say that. And I believe a big part of it is the Sally Bowles character because of how accepting she is of Brian and the cabaret and, you know, her performance. But it's definitely a keeper. And I think it sparks a lot of conversation around what is happening in the film and how fascism was allowed to grow at this time and how easy it was for some people
to just ignore it
and to live their particular lives. It's also fascinating to me because the music is fantastic. The songs are great. They did not use a lot of the original songs from the Broadway show. And so a lot of these songs were new songs written for specifically the movie that went on to be adapted and added into the Broadway show. But I think it's fascinating how he structured the film. The pacing is really fascinating. And I think Bob Fosse was very smart in how he brought up all of these different themes and really examined them in this film.
Yeah. Brilliant film.
Definitely a keeper.
Happy Pride Month, everybody.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.